She's a business mogul.
Number one.
And wellness expert.
How can I help?
And now Chantel Ray and her amazing guests are here to guide you on your wellness journey.
Time to level up.
Welcome to the Waste Away Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to today's episode, and we have one of my absolute favorite guests. It is Peter Martone. He is called Dr. Sleep Right, and he is helping people get way better sleep. Not just good sleep, but way, way better sleep. And we are going to really dive in deep. And so if you're like, you know, I've already heard all of the different sleep habits, I've heard all the hacks, I've heard him before. No, stop right there. We are going to really dive in. We're going to give you information that you've never heard before. So Dr. Peter Martone, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. I love doing this. You get such an engaged audience, and I commend you for making a difference in this world. So thanks for everything you do.
Well, thank you. And I will tell you, your episodes are absolutely one of our biggest downloads ever. Like people just download and keep downloading and keep downloading. So we are so excited about that. All right. Well, I want you, for the people who maybe haven't listened to those episodes, and if you haven't listened to, you need to go back through and listen to those. But let's give people just kind of some of the main nuggets that you've shared with us, and then we'll dive in a little bit deeper of some of the top tips that people need to do when they want to get great sleep.
That's great. And I just want to, so I think as an overview, kind of just identifying how I got into the sleep industry is probably a good zigzag to know where I came from. And in helping it, so our mission is awakening the full potential of a well-rested, aligned you. That's the way better sleep. So helping people get way better sleep, the W is well-rested, A is aligned in you, awakening the full potential of a well-rested, aligned you. And the alignment within that, our branding, the way better sleep branding, is critical as to our identifying differentiation of who we are. You see, I'm an exercise physiologist, I'm a nutritionist, and I was a professional trainer, and then I was a chiropractor at the time when I started developing all these principles at 15 years. And I had been helping people regain their health through balancing a specific system called their autonomic nervous system. And I was helping them, we were working with women balancing their hormones. We're working with people that had digestion issues and autoimmune issues. And our big focus was balancing that autonomic nervous system. But the whole entire time on my entire practice, I had back pain myself. And it wasn't until, like I said, about 15 years into practice that I herniated my own disc. And I'm in the emergency room. I'm sprawled out. I'm hooked up on Dilaudid. And I remember thinking, how did it get to this? I'm helping people with pain and regaining function. And I myself am leveled within the emergency room because I have had back pain my entire life, and finally my disc herniated. So then I reviewed 3,000 x-rays, found that the pattern was in my neck, not my lower back, because as I had forward head posture, due to how I was sleeping, being texting all day long, being on a computer for hours, I lost the curve in my neck, and then the body compensates by picking up a scoliosis in the lower back to take pressure off of the discs. And in sense, what ended up happens is that weakens the disc. So I started saying, well, when's the best time I could fix this? And I figured that I could fix it at night when I'm sleeping by changing my sleeping position. And as I started changing and transforming my sleeping position, I didn't only get deeper and deeper sleep. I haven't had back pain since. And when I started implementing that into my patients chiropractically, we saw the results transform. Instead of having to come into me with the same patterns over and over again, because they were changing their sleeping positions, fixing their spines at night, their nervous systems balanced, and hence, now our mission is awakening the full potential of a well-rested, aligned you. That is the overview of why I am doing what I'm doing.
Awesome. Well, I want to share one thing that you taught me, and I feel like it's an absolute miracle, but I've always slept on my side, one of my different sides. I never slept on my stomach, but I almost either slept on my right side or my left side every single time. And I remember you came to me and you said, listen, you were on the podcast and you said the best position for you to sleep is on your back. And I was thinking to myself, there's no way. I've tried sleeping on my back a bunch of times. I've never been able to do it. And you gave some tips on how to sleep on your back. And within about 4 days of me doing those, I actually now sleep on my back every single night. And you can ask my husband, he's like, I literally lay like this and sleep every single night. So can you talk about that first, of what you can do to stay sleeping on your back?
So we developed some new concepts since the last time I was on the show.
Okay.
And this is the concept of the sleep triune, right? In order to get way better sleep, you have to start out what we call then the corrective sleeping position. Well, the corrective sleeping position is in a specific position that you put yourself in, and we'll show you that. But the sleep triune is what ultimately is at play in the reason why people can't sleep, because there are three things battling the entire night. It's your conscious brain, your subconscious brain, and the body. So the conscious brain, it's the one that screws everything up. You know, it has all the excuses. I can't, I won't. There's just the conscious brain just needs to let go. The subconscious brain, this is really where the money meets the road is. The subconscious brain wants safety in order to fall asleep, and the body wants to be in alignment. So what happens is when the conscious brain puts ourselves to sleep curled up in a ball, the conscious brain thinks that it's comfortable, but the body is so twisted and torqued, it can't. There's no possible way. The average person will toss and turn 20 to 40 times a night because the body's in pain. The conscious brain is safe, so that's why you fall asleep. But because the body's in pain, you're going to toss and turn. So we categorize the conscious brain into three animals. You're either a gorilla, right? Or where you can fall asleep anywhere. You're so secure. The subconscious brain has no enemies, and I can put you in any position. And those are the people that are just going to be able to fall asleep like that in one night and never have a problem. But most people aren't the gorilla. Most people are the armadillo. The armadillo has that shell, that hard shell, and they want to curl up in a ball for the subconscious brain to feel safe. And then the last one is the ostrich. The ostrich is the one that needs to, you know, get the pillows over their face. They need to stick their head into the bed. So when you're thinking about putting somebody into a position, like they say, in alignment, lying on their back, the subconscious brain in most of those animals don't feel safe. So you need to create safety for the subconscious brain and then get the conscious brain out of the way. And you do that by putting pillows on your chest. You can put that creates that, like, that comfort into that armadillo type of pressure. You can put a pillow over your head. If you're that ostrich that needs that safety, I use the head garage and I put pillows all around my head. And if you're a side sleeper, you can lie on your back and then put a pillow against the side of your face. And that creates almost a feeling of lying on your side when you're not really lying on your side, you're lying on your back. So that is how you're able to fall asleep in an aligned position. Put the subconscious brain, create a safe environment, and then the goal is going to be get the conscious brain out of its own way.
So one thing that I know that really helped me to motivate me, and this is for girls, I guess guys too, but I was getting lines on my face and I could see them. And so I obviously I don't want to get, you know, too much Botox and stuff on my face. And I was like, oh my gosh. And a friend of mine was like, you have to lay on your back. If you lay on your back, you won't be getting all these crazy lines on your face. And so I was like, okay, that was a motivation for me to sleep on my back. And I think, I'm trying to think of what I did. I remember I just put pillows, like you said, tons of pillows. I have so many pillows on my bed, but I just put pillows on this side and this side. And then I just, whatever I did, I was like, there's no way I'm sleeping on my side tonight. Because the other consequence of sleeping on my side with what you said is I would inevitably at least once a week wake up with a crick in my neck, have to go to the chiropractor, because however I laid so that it made a crick in my neck. So that was kind of my, I think you also have to have some motivation of, you know, why do I want to sleep on my back? And those two, the lines on my face, going to the chiropractor, were like, okay, I've got to figure this out.
If the pain of change is less than the perceived benefit, nobody's going to make a change. Basically, what that means is the why, if the why is big enough, the what doesn't matter. And most people don't believe that changing their sleeping position can have a significant impact, not just on their reality today. I call it where they are as a progressive degenerative reality. You might be okay today with a little hip and a little neck pain and a crick every once in a while, but you extrapolate that 10 years, 15 years, and 20 years, you are causing so much degeneration and damage to the cervical spine, which is directly affecting your health and well-being. Wrinkles is a huge thing, which is why people will sleep on their back. But the reason why they don't really focus on it is because they don't understand the impact that side sleeping has on their health and well-being. If you have digestion issues, hormonal imbalances, immune system dysfunction, side sleeping is complicating all of that because it's putting pressure on a specific nerve called the vagus nerve, and the vagus nerve suppresses all three of those systems.
So good. All right, well, let's give people some surprising sleep hacks that people may have never heard before. So give us some of your tips that you think that people might be surprised to hear about.
I think I might have said this last time, but every time I review this with people, regardless if I've told them 100 times, it is one of my best sleep hacks we came up with early on, isn't it? It's the way to get the conscious brain shut down. You got to shut down. To basically picture it like a handoff, you know, say in football. So the quarterback needs to hand off the ball to the subconscious brain. And in order to do that, you need to focus on your memories. You can't focus on thinking. So what I tell people is you can never think yourself to sleep. You have to remember yourself to sleep. And what I mean by that is you can't think about something that happened today or a to-do list that you need to do tomorrow, or you can't consciously think about rationalizing relationships. You need to remember an old memory in the past. So for instance, walking a golf course, you know, one swing, another swing, another swing. Okay, now you're at the, you know, you don't have to think about every one of your putts and stuff like that. But the more you can remember hole one, hole two, shot three, shot four, and remember yourself around that golf course, let's say this is just a memory, then once you put yourself to sleep on that memory once, remember that every night you go to bed, and you'll go to bed on that memory quicker and quicker and quicker. And when you're focusing on that memory, your body is going to tie in putting yourself to sleep.
So good. One of the other things that you taught me that I've done, and I'll kind of share, is the separating your sheets. So if you have a husband or a wife that you sleep with, you know that you've had to have stolen covers in the middle of the night, and waking up sheetless is going to disrupt your sleep. And you've tugging over it. And so what I've done with what you've talked about is just to avoid a fight with the blankets is you just have one fitted sheet, but then on each side of the bed, we have our own top sheet and our own little blanket. And then we simply cover the entire bed with a duvet and nobody will be able to tell the difference. Like if you come into my house, it looks like we have one big sheet, but no, I have my own sheet. I have my own like snuggly velvet blanket. And then he has his own, and that's been a miracle. So thank you for sharing that with me.
Yeah, the welcome. The in order to get good deep sleep, you need to, we talked about this right before we did the podcast, and we can dive into this a little bit more, but you need to have your body core temperature drop 1 to 2 degrees within the first third of your sleep cycle. So your body wants to cool. Now, this is where I believe a lot of sleep experts, their understanding just stops there because they think you need to just cool the body the whole entire night, which is not true. And if the body it needs to cool, then it warms itself up later on. So if you wake up and you're too cold, you're going to stimulate a sympathetic response where the body is going to shiver and then you won't be able to go back to sleep. So the body needs to cool to a specific point in time. So when I talk about sheets, one of the also the things that I think needs to correlate with that is your pajamas. What type of pajamas should you be wearing? Should you be wearing, you know, a sweatshirt and sweatpants? Should you be wearing short sleeves or like some people don't wear any pajamas? You know, what's the best thing to wear? And I go back to the laws of, it's called the allostatic load in the body. And this is where all of my understanding of the autonomic nervous system comes in, because it's not just about sleep. It's about consistency. So the more consistent lifestyle habits you can have, the better off you're going to be. So the body wants consistency within the core. So I like wearing long sleeve pajamas with, you know, long legged pajamas. You don't have to do that when it's hot outside in the summertime. But if you're keeping your room at 69, 68, you know, 70 degrees, you can get away with a nice long sleeve, long pants, and then cover yourself from your neck all the way down to your waist. Then you can have your arms and your hands exposed and your body can temperature regulate out there. And then the harder the body needs to work at cooling it down would be the warmer the room is, right? So there's a dance between cooling the body down but not making it too cold where you're freezing. You do not want that in the middle of the night because it'll stress your entire sympathetic nervous system.
So what do you think? Okay, because yeah, we were talking about this before we started recording. So for me, I was keeping our room somewhere around 68 to 69 degrees. And that was perfect. And then I was like, you know, why don't I try to cool it down some more? And I think we brought it down to 66 or 67 degrees. And I always wake up. You know me, I get great, great sleep, but, and I always get a crown on my Oura ring. But the one thing is I drink a lot of water before bed for whatever reason. I'm not sure why. I know I've got to fix that. And I then will wake up at least once a night to go to the bathroom. And when I do, if I make that temperature 66 to 67 degrees, when I go to the bathroom and I come back, I'm so cold that then normally if it's at 67 or 68 degrees, I can pop back into bed and just go right back to sleep. But if it's too cold, then I can't, and that disrupts my sleep. So if you had to pick, and oh, by the way, I sleep naked. So I have to sleep naked. I cannot sleep well with anything on. So what if someone was going to sleep naked, what would the temperature of the room be that you would suggest?
I would suggest like 71 degrees.
Really?
Yeah. So think about the delta. Okay. Delta is the difference between 98 degrees and, you know, what your room temperature is. Your body needs to fight to keep its core temperature at 98 degrees, okay? 98 degrees. So it only needs to drop, let's say, to 97 degrees in order to its internal core temperature and in order to get good deep sleep. Arguably, maybe, you know, this is Fahrenheit, maybe 1.2 degrees. You have a delta of almost 30, so 7, 8, 9, 20, 8, 18, almost, yeah, 28 degrees. So that is way, or 30 degrees, that's way too much for the body to fight to stay warm, right? If you're not putting anything against your body, then you need to sleep in a warm room so that you're not getting too cold. Because when you're looking at the difference between 72 and 68, that 4 degrees is the difference between walking to the bathroom and not being freezing. So I would want to keep your room warmer. If you're going to put a layer on, then you can drop it, you know, then you can drop it a degree or two.
So would you say, if someone's wearing pajamas, then you would say maybe 68 degrees? Is that kind of where you would like it to be?
Yeah, it's all about allostatic load, which means your body is fighting at night to maintain a healthy, you know, a core temperature of, let's say, 97 degrees. So that 30 degree difference, that takes a lot of effort for, you know, and that's coming from the sympathetic nervous system, which is then suppressing the, because in order for you to, do you know how the body creates heat at night? Well, there's a couple different reasons, but it does it through your metabolism, okay? So if your metabolism needs to speed up, what has to happen? Heart rate's going to increase, right? Pressure's going to increase within your body. All of those interfere with deep sleep. So you want the body's respiratory rate to cool down, I mean, to slow down. You don't want it to speed up so it's keeping itself, you know, warm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But I think the biggest thing that I also learned from you as well is what you said about keeping your hands and your feet not in the blankets. And that is really hard for people to do. So I want you to explain why that's so important, to make sure you don't have socks on your feet, you don't have anything on your hands, you're not putting your hands underneath the blanket. Why is that so important?
So because people might be confused because they've listened to other sleep experts explain, well, it's the opposite. You want to have nothing on your body and put gloves and socks on. Well, they're saying that because they want your body's core temperature to cool. But they don't, in order to get good sleep, but they are totally missing the point on this, where the body's allostatic load means you want the body to work as, yes, you want the body to cool, but you don't want the core to get so cold where you're shivering all night long. You want to just be able to have non-vital extremities exposed to the environment and then keep the core warm. And then what the body will do is it will open up the capillary beds in your hands and your feet like radiators, and then it will cool out the hands and your feet. So if you first start to fall asleep, most of the time you're getting a body core temperature drop. So you're going to feel cold. Your hands are going to be freezing. Get them under the covers until you start to feel warm. It's a normal thing. You get into bed and you want to warm up. You can even heat your bed. You can, you know, get really warm. Then the body's temperature, once you fall asleep, is going to drop. So right before you fall asleep, get those hands and those feet, once they're warmed up, out of the covers.
Yeah, I think that really makes such a big difference, because like you said, that heat tends to dissipate faster out of your hands and feet. So it's hard to get the exact, you know, amount of what your room temperature should be. Like you said, sometimes it might be, you know, even if you're at a hotel, you know, the heating and air conditioning is a little bit different. And so because the heat tends to dissipate faster through your hands and your feet. If you are hot, your body will cool to the temperature it really needs to. Is that right? Am I expressing that right?
Absolutely. And you want the body to waste as little energy as you can, keeping it warm. Think about this. Let's say there's a dead body. I know this is really weird to think about. And you put it under covers and you stick it in a room that's 70 degrees. After the end of the night, that body is going to be 70 degrees, right? Because, you know, there's no heat being produced because the body's not alive. So a 70 degree room, I mean, you're talking 68 degree room, that's 30 degrees under the body's core temperature. So you want to be able to make sure that the body drops its core temperature only 1 to 2 degrees. And it will do that in lieu of that survival state by using your covers correctly. And then who cares if your hands and your feet are cold? Your body doesn't. It will not wake you up if your hands and your feet are cold. It will only wake you up if your torso is cold because it's trying to shiver to stay warm.
I don't know about you guys, but I am stressed. And if you're feeling overwhelmed this holiday season, then I get it. With all the family get-togethers, it is just a relentless source of stress. But anyway, there is something that I've got called Stress Guardian, and it's actually made by Bioptimizers, the people who make the magnesium breakthrough, which I love, love, love. But anyway, they are literally made this new product. It has 14 adaptogenic herbs, and it just regulates your stress. I just actually took some right this second, and it's awesome. If you go to stressguardian.com/wasteaway and put in waste away for 10% off your first order, it's stressguardian.com/wasteaway. Go there now. Well, I have a listener question from Stephen in Corpus Christi, Texas. He says, I'm having a terrible time sleeping at night. I'm getting major leg cramps, and I feel like I'm doing all the things right that I've heard on different podcasts. I'm getting a terrible score of restlessness on my Oura Ring. I think I have parasites, which we all do, but I think that maybe I have more than my share, so I'm getting a bad restless score. I read something that it says pour a glass of tart cherry juice on something that I heard, and that's the perfect pre-bedtime drink. It said that it was the world's richest natural source of melatonin, and that melatonin is a hormone that helps regulate the sleep cycle. But I don't really want to have that much sugar, but it said if you just have 1 ounce of juice with 7 ounces of water, you're going to sleep like a rock. I'm wondering if this is working. I tried it for 1 or 2 nights, but I don't want to have all that sugar, which it's not that much because it's just 1 ounce, right before bed. What is your thoughts? Stephen in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Yeah, that's a great question. A very educated, I can tell, a very educated, frustrated, chronic fatigue person. So first thing I would say is the net of restlessness typically occurs because the body, right? Remember, we have conscious brain, subconscious brain, and body. So the restlessness typically happens within the body. The restlessness in the body, I would have to ask a few questions to him, but I'll answer the questions based on what I believe is going on. So if there's restlessness in the legs, a lot of times you can use magnesium. You take the number 300, multiply it by your age, and then you get a number like if you're 100. If you're, let's say, 20 years old, you can take the 3. So then you can multiply 3 by 20, and then you get, oh my God. Hold on. So typically, the average person needs about 325 milligrams of magnesium. You take the number 3 and multiply it by your age. So then what you can do is glycinate and then malate and citrate. There's so many different magnesiums to kind of think about. But, you know, a good general magnesium would be like malate. So then you take a magnesium malate 325 milligrams. What that will do is open up blood vessels. That will decrease muscle tension if you're getting any cramping in your legs. And it will also calm the central nervous system, so the body will naturally produce melatonin. The next thing is if you're getting restless legs, that could be coming from neuropathies in your lower back because of the position that you're sleeping in. It could be irritating the L4, L5, and L3 nerve roots, which translate down the sciatic nerve. So then you're going to have to move those legs around or you'll get some cramping. So that would, magnesium will also help that. Chiropractic care will also help that. And also lying in a position in alignment with your legs slightly elevated will help that. So you can do different things. As far as the tart cherry juice, I'm with you. I really don't like having a fluid before I go to bed just because it wakes you up in the middle of the night. So you have to go to the bathroom. But there's certain things that can stimulate melatonin would be like getting a light carbohydrate before you go to bed, in a fat together, like a little piece of a gluten-free bread with some, sunflower oil on it or some sunflower butter on it, something like that. I like to do those things for people at the beginning if they're having a difficult time sleeping and they're getting that restless leg syndrome.
Let's talk about as far as not drinking or having caffeine before bed. So what would you say? And it's funny because I was at the airport and I was watching this lady and she was literally ordering like this double shot from Starbucks. I was seeing her order that and it was like 9 o'clock at night. And I was thinking to myself, how in the world is this lady ordering a shot at 9 o'clock this late at night? So talk about caffeine. And then also, when should you stop really drinking fluids? How far before so that you're not waking up so many times in the night to go to the bathroom?
Yeah, that's a great question because you can have coffee before you go to bed, but fall asleep. You're just going to get a horrible night's sleep. Now, the one thing about caffeine is the half-life of caffeine is 5 hours. And what the half-life means is if you drink something that has, let's say, like a very large, so the average cup of coffee will have between 80 to 100 milligrams of caffeine in it, micrograms or milligrams, something like that. So if you do, let's say, a Starbucks, a Venti Starbucks, that can have 300, 320 milligrams of caffeine. So if you have that at noontime, let's say, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, right? That's 5 hours later, that 300 milligrams will be at 150. At 10 o'clock at night, that 150 will be down to 75. So that's the half-life of caffeine. It basically gets metabolized, half of it within every 5 hours. So you don't want to have anything above 25 to 30 milligrams of caffeine in your system while you're going to sleep. So you can, I tell people you want to have your last cup of coffee by like 10 o'clock in the morning. You don't want to have anything past noon because you're going to affect your sleep that night. You might be able to fall asleep and say, I can have a cup of coffee and then go right to sleep. You can. That's not the problem getting to sleep. It's your heart rate stays elevated. And when your heart rate stays elevated and doesn't drop, you're blowing through that deep sleep zone and you're not getting good, deep restorative sleep.
I think it's a matter of people. Because like for me, if you gave me a cup of coffee at 8 o'clock at night, there's no way I would even fall asleep because I'm not used to that. So I wouldn't be able to. But I understand what you're saying. There's some people who can say, yep, I can have a cup of coffee and fall right to sleep. But you're saying you may be able to fall right to sleep, but you're going to get terrible sleep quality because of it.
Yeah, it's always the conscious brain. It's always the rationalization of like, oh, no, I can do that. Oh, no, I heard this. There's just so much. There's not like a problem on the internet of not enough information. There's a problem on the internet with too much information. And then how do you go through cipher view the forest of all this misinformation and be able to come up with something that works for you. And really, when you're thinking about it, put yourself on this planet 200 years ago, right? And think about, you are designed to be one with our circadian rhythm, which means we want our bodies to go to sleep as close to sunset as possible and wake up as close to sunrise as possible. When we throw ourselves off of that rhythm because of, right, you know, artificial lights, we're watching, Seinfeld reruns, late at night, and you're pushing and you're blowing through those zones, you're going to internalize that with dysfunction. So if you have anything, you have diabetes, you have you have hypersensitivity, you have allergies. Every time the seasons change, you get stuffy, you get sick, you get strep throats. If you have any dysfunction, you're chronically fatigued and it's your patterns.
Let's talk about, some of these people who are kind of part of the 4 a.m. club, and they've kind of been trained that there's like, if you are a successful entrepreneur, a successful CEO, you should be up at 4 a.m., grinding out the day. And then there's other people out there that say, the best thing you could do for yourself is go to bed early and then be able to wake up when your body wakes you up with that internal clock. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah. So, when you look at your definition of success, is it success within business or is success within health or is it success within balance? I know a very successful gentleman that was just diagnosed with multiple myeloma, right? And, just sold his business, very successful, but there's dysfunction and he has really, really bad sleep patterns. So we have to be careful on what we identify as success. So when we extrapolate everything back, it's just natural that our bodies need to go to bed as close to sundown and wake up naturally as close to sunrise. Now, if you're waking up with an alarm to force yourself up, that's horrible. You want your body to wake up naturally. And if you're tired during the day and you're run down, that's not normal. You should be able to get out of bed, be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and then have energy all day long. You can work out. You can work out in the yard. You can go to work, whatever you're doing. And then at night, when it comes down to it, you should be able to then just drift off to sleep. So you want most of your production within a time frame where the amount of sleep, picture your body like an iPhone. You want to be able to, if you're going to use all of your apps on your iPhone, you need to plug it in more. So the more brain clarity and expectation you look at from the body, the more you need to plug it in. Now, focusing on quality of sleep does allow you to be able to get less sleep. But most people, I caution people to do that just because getting that quality of sleep is really important on the timing. So you can't get super quality sleep going to bed at midnight and waking up at 5 a.m. It won't happen. You have to translate that before midnight.
I go to sleep at about 9 o'clock every night and then wake up at about 6 o'clock every morning. So I get a lot of sleep. And then I do allow myself, my body just literally naturally wakes myself up at 6 a.m. every morning. I've trained myself so well. I'm like a well-oiled machine. Let's talk about mattress quality and neck. We also have people talking about what is the best kind of pillow and what is the best kind of mattress for you to get, and any other kind of things that maybe people haven't thought about as far as getting the best sleep.
Yeah, so I'm pretty, when I was in that emergency room and I found that I needed to change my sleeping position, it wasn't just because it was being a back sleeper, and you have to understand, it was brutal. I was a side sleeper. And my only lifestyle habit that I teach people is the 10-minute sleep rituals. You are only in control with how you fall asleep. That's it. Once you're asleep, the body is going to take over. The subconscious brain's at play. So you want to put yourself in the position. So think about the body first. Put the body in alignment and then create safety for the subconscious brain. So when we're doing that, we can put the body in alignment on pretty much any surface. So the bed becomes less important when you're focused on the corrective sleeping position. You have to understand, most people are looking for more comfortable beds to support their distorted sleeping positions. So their pressure points, you know, they're sleeping on their side, the bed's going to, you know, accept that shoulder pressure more, and then that's just going to cause more dysfunction, giving people, you know, frozen shoulder just earlier down the road, even though you're able to sleep in that position for a longer period of time. So it's my focus to, before we talk about platform, we talk about positioning. And then once we talk about positioning, then we have to think about the pillow that you're using, because a pillow defined as a support for your head. You can't support your head and stay on your back for an extended period of time without causing damage to the cervical spine. So what you want to do is you want to get a pillow. We created a pillow called the Neck Nest, but it was basically a design of me taking like soft down pillows and jamming them underneath my neck so that when my neck is off of the back of the pillow or the neck nest, it's supported about a half an inch off of the bed. My head does not touch the bed and is not supported because my body's using the weight of my head off of the back of the pillow to gently stretch a curve back into my neck. And I will show you that position right now. Can you see that, Chantel? Right
there? Yes. Uh-huh.
All right. And so basically what I do is I take the neck nest and I put it under my neck, and that my head is just off of the bed. And it's that position, what the lack of support to my head is what stretches the neck in. We don't want this to happen, where you're supporting the head and the neck at the same time. We want the head off of the back of the neck nest, and then that is what stretches the neck. So when you put your body into that positioning, basically what will happen is your body weight is distributed evenly over a greater surface area. So I just like those latex beds. And if you buy a latex bed that has some good support, if it's too hard for you at the beginning, just put a topper down. And if that's too hard, put another topper on the topper. But so create a nice cushion between you and the supportive mattress.
So let's talk about the lighting in the room. So one of the things that lack of lighting. One of the things that I've heard a lot of people say is, you know, with the darkening masks that you put on, that it's very difficult to get yourself to sleep with that on. Like for whatever reason, you know, putting that on, it's hard for them to get themselves in that pattern. How important is it for the room to be super, super pitch black? And how can you train yourself to wear one of those night masks? And how important is that?
Yeah, I think the night mask is super important. We've done research on the night mask, and we found when that mask is on your eyes, and it's not just the fact that it's blocking out the light, it's putting pressure against your eyeballs, slight pressure against your eyes, which is stimulating your parasympathetic nervous system, which is improving what's called heart rate variability when you wear a sleep mask. So the whole trick is in sleep is you have the sympathetics and you have the parasympathetics. Sympathetics are dominant during the day and your parasympathetics are a little bit suppressed. When you are sleeping, your parasympathetic nervous system needs to be at play. Your parasympathetic nervous system is your rest and digest nervous system. It's your growth nervous system. So it's where you thrive. And your sympathetics are where you survive. So you want to be and thrive when you're sleeping. In order to do that, we need to stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system. You do that with heat, right? You can take like a hot shower or a steam room or a jacuzzi or a sauna before bed. That stimulates that parasympathetic nervous system. Pressure on your eyes can do it, slowing down your respiratory rate, tapping your pulse, tapping your carotid, meditating, sets. There are certain things that help that parasympathetic nervous system become stimulated. Lights, flashing lights, any sort of light in the room, even alarm clock lights, those, that light against the eyeballs typically stimulates the sympathetics. So I like to have the room as dark as possible, no lights on. If there are some light leaks, that's where either a pillow over your head, a blanket over your eyes, a towel over your eyes, a sleep mask, something will help you be able to fall asleep.
Guys, I just want to interrupt for just a second, and I want you to hear Paul Saladino talk about why liver is so important. And if you don't like liver, we have another option for you.
Your ancestors were eating liver. And the reason that this sort of wisdom has been passed down is because liver is very nutritious. It's basically nature's multivitamin. If you look at the nutrients in meat, they're great. You've got zinc, you got B6, you got B12, you got some K2. But if you look at liver, it really complements what's in muscle meat. And there are many unique nutrients found in organs, specifically liver as a powerhouse of these, that are difficult to obtain outside of liver. Like meat and organs are like peanut butter and jelly. They just go together. They're supposed to be eaten together. The easiest way to eat liver is just to do it raw. If you don't want to eat liver raw, you can cook it. But the reason that I like to do it raw is because there are unique nutrients in liver that are probably somewhat degraded when you cook the liver.
This really is like the most nutrient-rich supplements that you can find. And they are amazing. I have tried them. I absolutely love them. So just go to heartandsoil.co, use the coupon code Chantal Ray, and save some money there. Let's go to a listener question, and this is from Kelly in Miami, Florida. This is long, so I'm going to try to just take parts of what she says. But she says, do you think nose tape is actually good for you? She says, the idea that breathing through your nose is said to be able to improve conditions ranging from allergies and bad breath to sleep apnea and high blood pressure. But then I read other articles that there's no evidence suggesting that taping your mouth shut overnight is helpful. So I'm trying to figure out, is nose tape or mouth tape? Basically, she kind of goes on and on about both. But her gist of her question is, you know, nose tape or mouth tape all a fraud? Or is there something to either one? And kind of talk about what is the real benefits of either.
So one of the best things that we need to do and I think that this is one of the issues when we're kids also, is we want to sleep with our tongue sucked up to the roof of our mouth and our mouth shut. By doing that, you'll breathe out of your nose. Now, when we keep our mouth shut and we're taught to do that as a child, which we typically don't, that opens up our palate. It opens up our airways. What happens is we are never taught to breathe correctly when we're sleeping. So we become these mouth breathers. I don't particularly use mouth tape. I just can't stand it. I never use that nose tape that opened up my nose. Actually, I did once if I'm ever sick, and to keep my nose open, I will use that nose tape so that I can breathe a little bit better out of my nose. I am more of the understanding of, I try to teach myself to suck my tongue to the roof of my mouth, keeping my mouth shut when I fall asleep. And then I use my blankets. I use my covers up underneath my chin. So my head, so it holds my neck back and it keeps my mouth shut. So I use my covers underneath my jaw to hold my mouth shut. So it is true that you do want to breathe out of your nose when you sleep. And it's a learned or an unlearned art That's why I like those breath books where they teach you how to regain the art of breathing.
Wow, that is so funny because my husband said something to me. I didn't even know I was doing it. He's like, do you know you put the covers all the way underneath your neck like that? And then I even put my covers sometimes over my mouth. And so I was thinking, wow, that's really good. I didn't even notice that I was doing it. But that's actually, if you wanted to, you could put your covers a little bit over your mouth. And that would help you to make sure that you're keeping your mouth shut. Because that tape can get annoying, like wearing that every single night. That could be kind of annoying every night.
Exactly. I just can't do it. But yeah, I get it.
Well, give us any other tips that we haven't talked about that can really, maybe that are unusual or any surprising sleep hacks that we've never heard before.
Okay. So the parasympathetic nervous system, right? It is our thrive and survive nervous system. Well, your parasympathetic nervous system is at play when you are resting or relaxing or meditating. Your sympathetics are when you're in survival. So you can just smell something or go through a field or when it's springtime, the smell will bring back memories, right? Either it could be bring back a bad memory or a good memory. And those often, a lot of times when people have like emotions during different times of the year, a lot of times it's due to the smell, it's due to the feels. So we live our life through our nervous system. We live our life through our senses. So there's a way to retrain the brain through the nose to be able to stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system. And what you do is you meditate, right? And more specifically, you rest, you pray, you do whatever you want to slow down your heart rate, but in slowing down your respiratory rate. You do that on a regular basis, and then you just pick a scent. You take any scent. Every time you do that, put that scent right underneath your nose. So every time you are focused consciously on relaxing, use that scent because you're training the subconscious brain to attach relaxation to that scent. So all you have to do at night to stimulate that parasympathetic response is to put that scent on your pillow and you'll fall asleep and you'll calm down your central nervous system.
Let's talk about naps and what your opinion is on naps. And if you say absolutely not for naps, then say if you are going to take a nap, what would be the best time to take a nap if you had to?
I like naps when you let's say on the weekend you stayed up really late, you had a party or you had some alcohol or you ended up having cappuccino late that destroyed your sleep cycles. So you nap when you, let's say, or you're going on a fishing trip and you have to wake up at 4 a.m. You nap when you lose sleep one night or two nights because you can't make that sleep up, you know, the next night by getting an extra hour sleep. It doesn't work like that. So you can use that nap during the middle of the day and then get your normal sleep that night. So the best time to nap is circadian rhythm wise is when your body has a dropping body core temperature. And that's typically around noon and 1 o'clock. Most people believe that they get that lull during that day because they eat food, but it's really because your body gets a dropping core temperature. And when your body has a natural drop in core temperature, you get tired. So The best time to nap is between noon and 1 o'clock.
Let's talk about one of the things that you said, and my husband always reminds me of this, is he says, you know, well, Peter always says that the sleep that you get from, you know, before midnight counts as double. And so I want you to kind of expand on that and talk about what can someone do. Let's say they work, you know, a late shift and they work until 11 o'clock at night. Is there anything else that they can do? And why is that so important for someone to train themselves if they can to try to, you know, get off early and switch to try to get to sleep as early as possible?
Yeah. So, and it does vary from person to person and a body will change its energy spikes depending on consistency. It takes a long period of time to do so. So I make my recommendation on a pool of the average person. So basically, you like a lot of times people hear it. If you're studying, you're in college, you're so tired. Then right around a certain period of time, usually it's around 11:30 to midnight, you get a second wind and you start to get energy. And then it's really difficult to go to sleep around that second wind because your brain's racing. That is a natural energy spike. It's an adrenal spike. You want to be in deep sleep during that second wind, during that natural time. And I put most people at that energy spike around midnight. So every hour of sleep before midnight is worth 2 hours of sleep after midnight because you're in deep restorative sleep at an at a body energetically high state, so you're getting more healing done at a cellular level. That's why that's important. So if people are late and they're shift workers, as long as they're keeping things consistent, their energy spike will shift. And it's, but if they're going to bed, like, let's say 11, or 12, and then, oh, they try to make this up, then they go to bed at 9 o'clock one night, 9 o'clock another night, you know, 7 o'clock, then 12, that disruption in the pattern, the body wants consistency. So the more consistent you can be with your lifestyle patterns, then the body eventually over a period of time will adapt.
All right, this is the last listener question. It's from Stephanie from Brooklyn, New York. She says, I go to sleep at 10 p.m. and I'm waking up at 3 p.m. almost every single night. I have to go to the bathroom. And then once I do, I can't ever get back to sleep. What can I do to help this?
Well, the best way to get back to sleep is to enter the dream enter the memory that you put yourself to sleep in. So use a consistent memory that you go to sleep with, and always use that memory to put yourself to sleep. So if let's say you woke up in the morning and you need to get yourself to sleep, dive back into that memory, in that rhythmic memory the body will connect dreaming to.
So are you saying, okay, let me make sure I understand. So you're saying, let's say I woke up and I was dreaming about eating cotton candy. I don't know. So then when I go back to bed, just go back to that same dream of eating cotton candy? Or no, you're saying come up with something that you always think about right before you go to sleep.
Yes, to put yourself to sleep. So I'll give you, for instance, had a party. We had 115 people at the party. This was back in December. And I count everybody at that party, where they were, what friend group they were in, then my family, then my lake house people, you know. So I count everybody at that party over and over and over again, and it puts me right to sleep. I never get to the end anymore because I'm asleep by the time I get to like the 50th person. But you just count the people within your breath. And that, now, if I wake up in the middle, I go to the bathroom and I come back, I'll go back to that same memory and I'll start counting people. What you can also do, though, is once you start counting people, maybe that dream comes back into your mind. You can enter the dream too. So you can go from your memory to the dream and you'll fall asleep.
So my husband is the cleanest guy you've ever met. He takes a minimum of 4 showers every single day. Like, it's crazy. I've never seen anyone who takes more showers than him. But one of the things he does a lot is he takes a shower before bed. I take a bath before bed every night. What do you think about taking like a hot shower or a hot bath with like Epsom salt? Do you think that it really makes a difference in your sleep, or do you think it's just kind of something you think about?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great technique to be able to get yourself to sleep quickly, is take a nice warm shower. And that warm shower, your body's temperature cooling, is a really good way to be able to get your body into a quick deep sleep. So I love that heat right before bed.
Let's talk about one last thing, and that is screen time and blue light exposure. So one of the things that some people like to do is they love to watch TV before going to sleep. What is your opinion on screen time and blue lights?
You know, I'm not as upset with, because I watch Seinfeld, and like I said, right before bed, I love watching those reruns of Seinfeld for some reason. And I can shut the TV off and just go right to bed. I don't know if, I mean, yeah, but I'm also in a low light situation. I don't have all the lights on in my room. In my house, we're low light situation. You know, once it's dark, all our lights are low. It's either candle lights or a small light. So I like to drop the lights on in the house. But as far as the TV, I haven't seen an issue with myself with watching TV and falling
in bed. I love it. Well, is there anything that I haven't asked you of any other sleep hacks that we haven't talked about today that you want to share with listeners?
You came so prepared today. I love it. I think we covered everything.
Awesome. Well, this has been amazing. Tell listeners where they can find you, where they can follow you. And also don't forget, I have a coupon code for Chantel Ray for the neck. So tell them how they can get that.
Yeah, so they can go to necknest.com and they can get a discount on the necknest. That is the pillow that we have created. And there are videos there. It's a pillow that's not going to be more comfortable. It's a pillow that's going to be more functional. And then over a period of time, the comfort will happen. So you want to use a neck nest at the beginning. Just think, even if you're like, there's no way I'm going to be able to be back sleepy. You don't have to be. You just need to fall asleep in that position. Then the middle of the night, if you wake up, throw it on the floor. So that's necknest.com. But what we do, which I really like, is at drsleepright.com, you can take a free sleep risk assessment.
You can take 25 questions, and then we score how well you, or how your sleep habits are affecting your health and well-being. And then we also give you tips on what you can change after you take the quiz.
Awesome. Well, this has been amazing. You always bring so many great ideas. You are absolutely the sleep expert of the year, of the decade. You're my absolute favorite.
Thank you,
and I'm so glad that you are bringing people so much better sleep. So thank you, Dr. Peter, for being on today.
Thanks for having me.
And you guys stay tuned. We've got another episode coming up in just a few. Bye-bye for now.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, it would mean the world to us for you to leave a review on iTunes to get this podcast out to others that may have the same questions that you do. And as always, if you have a question that you want answered, email those to questions@chantelrayway.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.